And time now to catch up with Jeff from Acela Wine. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Peter. Good morning to all our listeners.
Well, it's happening, isn't it?
Yeah, nice day out here, Peter. It hasn't been quite as cold overnight, but definitely heading into winter. There's no doubt about that. So the only advantage of it, Peter, is that you don't have to cut the grass weekly.
No, that's true. It takes a lot longer for it to grow.
It does. It takes a little while longer, and but you still got to do it about every 10 months. The days are so nice and warm that the grass pushes through. You can easily see whether you have summer grass in your grass, Peter, in your supposedly beautiful landscape lawn, because suddenly a part of your grass dies, and that's the summer grasses.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And poor old Buddy, might he be blowing icicles off his anatomy?
Yes, well, Buddy's still ensconded in his house there, and when the gate alarm goes off, and I hope nobody comes in while on the program, the batteries are going flat, Peter, so it goes off about 6 times in a row.
Oh, no.
I got the door closed, but no, he races out of his house straight up the driveway to see who's coming in, so he's got it all figured out.
Oh, yeah, they there might be a little brain there, but there's a lot happening inside.
Yeah, that's for sure. Interesting things happening, Peter. I mean, we don't want to beat the coronavirus to death. It's beating itself to death. But I'm going to complain again, which we've said many, many times on the air, that the government is fearmongers because of the way they report their statistics. We had 15 cases yesterday, Peter. First cases in Western Australia in days and days, maybe weeks, no more than one or whatever. But those 6 cases, Peter, came off a ship, foreign flag ship, that's here to pick up live animals for export. So the ship comes into port in Western Australia. They've tested immediately. 6 crew members have got the virus. They're carted off to hospital or to quarantine. They're testing 50 others they feel are at risk. And suddenly, we got 15 cases yesterday. But we didn't. We imported 6 of those, Peter. And for all I know, a good percentage of the others could have been imported too, and are in hotels in Sydney and Melbourne.
Yeah.
And we know they're not in Sydney because we only had a couple of cases yesterday. And it's our life, Peter. 2 schools. They're two students, different high schools or different schools. I'm not sure they're high schools. But, they had to shut the school down. They got to clean it. They got to test all the classmates and teachers he came in contact with, send them home for quarantine, and a day or two later you open up. That's our future, Peter. We've been talking about that for the last 2 months.
Mate, there's one thing I'm worried. You mentioned that ship coming in and 6 people were positive. What about all the animals?
Yeah, well, we know cats can get it and pass it on. Well, I don't know if they can pass it on. They can certainly get it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. What's going to happen is I'll load it on, the ship will go off, and by the time it gets where it's going, Peter, there'll probably be 30 more cases.
Yeah. So we've got to do something.
Well, you can't do anything about it, Peter. We've always talked about that. We talked about it more in relation to planes. You're going to have planes fly in here. You can quarantine the passengers and do whatever the heck you think is necessary. But the pilots and hostesses and hosts, Peter, they fly out the next day.
That's right. And
you can't stop. You're going to have outbreaks. You cannot stop it unless you move to the South Pole. You cannot stop it. The world has to keep going. That's our future. Our future is, McDonald's in Victoria, and there's high school here, and, a ship, a live animal ship in Western Australia. That's our future, Peter. And you got to learn to deal with it. Now, we could have dealt with it 3 weeks ago, once we got it down to like 5 to 10, 15 cases, Peter. And no excuse whatsoever. They are not going to eliminate it.
No.
At least not in the foreseeable future. Might die out naturally. Who the heck knows? But and aside to that, Peter, which is kind of funny, our premier is complaining about the all the states being closed to New South Wales, and, you know, we're getting control of things here. But on the other side, she's making statements like, we got this, you know, pandemic bubbling under the surface here in New South Wales, and we got to be vigilant. She's telling all the other states that we got a major problem here, when we don't. Mm-hmm. You know, we're low. We had two cases yesterday, I think, and mostly we're, you know, we've been down below five, or certainly below 10, but down around 2, 3, 4, 5, 3, 2, 1, you know. You can't make public statements about having a disaster bubbling beneath the surface and then expect the other premiers just to open their borders.
It ain't going to happen.
No, you got to get your story straight. The story is, we've done a remarkable job here and we've virtually got it eliminated, but it's not possible to eliminate because of all the factors we just mentioned, Peter.
That's right.
And then maybe the other premiers will say, gee, that's great, open the borders. So, yeah, not the... Yeah. Not that it matters much. It's, you know, Queensland relies on tourism more than any other state, I would think. And so they're shooting themselves in the foot up there. Victoria and New South Wales, well, Victoria's got a lot more cases than New South Wales at the present time. But anyway, there was an interesting article about why children don't catch the virus. Mm-hmm. There's a particular receptor, and I won't go into its name, but children don't have them at the same rate that adults do.
Oh.
That's how the virus enters the body, and they just don't have these receptors, Peter. They have them in much, much smaller numbers, and so that's why this is an old folks' disease, Peter.
Yeah, yes, well, I mean, I'll cut you too.
Exactly. So that's interesting. It was another actually interesting thing, a paper about children too. If you want to interact with a child, imitate them. And I have a feeling this is where the favorite aunt bit comes from. Because when a child does something, the mother usually does something else, but the favorite aunt will imitate them. You know, or a stranger will imitate them, like a child bangs his fork on the table or a spoon on the table or something. And if you do that to the child, your interaction level goes up dramatically. And whereas a mother probably takes the spoon away from the child, mm-hmm. or, you know, and if she's clapping her hands or waving around and you imitate, the interaction is much stronger. They smile, you know, and their body response is much greater than if you can, and even if you imitate without making any noises, it's still much stronger, but because they don't speak, I guess, but they do get some out of the tone. But if you ignore them, of course, then you become just like the chair sitting next to them, you know, nothing else. So
nothing's happening here. Yeah,
so I would say you know, the favorite aunt probably interacts with the baby on a direct basis, responding to the baby, and the mother responds to what they think is best or think is required, and they don't spend as much time playing or directly imitating the child.
Mm-hmm. I'd say you got a good point there too.
Yeah, it came out of Sweden, and they did a scientific study. And I'm not sure how many babies were in the sample size, but apparently it was quite marked, you know, the difference in numbers. So that was kind of interesting, Peter.
Yeah, I'll say. Have you ever been in a supermarket where you're wandering around, you're doing your own bit shopping, and all of a sudden the little body is walking with you, and you think, I don't have any grandchildren. Who is, you know, excuse me, who belongs to this? You know, and you could spend 10 to 15 minutes looking for the mother, who's probably in another part of the supermarket playing with her bloody phone.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, of course, the recognition, I don't know, because by the time they walk, I think they're pretty well recognize. I'm always reminded of a study I saw quite some years ago now, probably could have been 15 or 20 years ago. You know how cows, and I'm not sure all our listeners are aware of this, but in dairies, cows have a pecking order.
Yes.
They go in to be milked in the same order every time. They sort it out. And if a cow tries to get, you know, like before her time, she gets savaged. And the cow goes to the same stall, you know, to be milked. But anyway, they did a, with a, I think, just two stalls, and had a man standing, or at least a dummy standing there, on each one. And they wanted to see if the cows could recognize people, and or they recognize clothes or whatever. And so they took these, and when the cow came in, and if it was usually at the left stall, but the guy that was usually there that fed him was at the right stall, they'd go to the right stall because they recognized the person. Then they'd start changing the clothes, Peter, to see if they could confuse the cow.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite remarkable, actually. They changed the clothes and the cow was still able to recognize the person. And and then you change the person, you put the other clothes, put the clothes the cow got used to on. And they have quite a remarkable capability of person, you know, of recognition. And I wonder where that, in a child, you know, they definitely recognize their mother in any clothes, I think, children. But, you know, when it comes to strangers or grandparents, as you would probably be, you know, in a case like that where the child wanders off with you, thinks you're somebody else. But where they actually can recognize people they don't see frequently. So, yeah, cows can apparently do it, Peter.
Amazing. Well, they've got bigger bodies, so they must have a bigger brain, and they probably think, this one's got the money. I can get some treats here.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, so we're open again, sort of, Peter. We've got to give cheese olive plates and snacks because we are licensed for food, but you know, it's quite ridiculous in the country, as we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
You know, when was the last time you heard that there was a coronavirus case outside of Sydney? You know, I mean, can you remember?
No.
And yet, you know, Bourke, you know, is shut down up in Timbuktu. Is shut down. Probably Timbuktu is shut down. But it just doesn't make any sense, Peter. You know, just punishing everybody, ruining everybody.
Well, I think
Setting them bankrupt.
Where the cases are breaking out, it's where people aren't washing their hands, looking after hygiene, and, you know, and then all of a sudden we have this little outbreak that then begins multiplying everywhere. So,
well,
you know.
They do get on top of it, Peter. Excuse me.
You got the froggies this morning.
Yeah. Well, our problem, my problem a bit on that, Peter, is, of course, we got the wood fire going again.
Oh, and wonderful.
It is. And it sucks the air because it's a, you know, slow combustion system.
Yeah,
it sucks in there slowly. But when you open the door, which I do when I get up in the morning, it gives me a bit of a burst, affects my allergies.
Must admit, when you got the fire going in your residence there, it's very warm, it's very comforting, and it's a pleasure to be there.
Yeah, it is, thanks. And, you know, the future is, of course, wood burning has to go in the future, Peter. It is a serious, the slow combustion is better because it burns everything. But we're still pumping an awful lot of smoke and carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide and everything else into the atmosphere. And the atmosphere can't take it.
That's right.
You know, in the end, there are many, many areas of the world where wood burning is against the law, you know, for heat, just because of that, just because of the pollution. But, you know, they're working so hard on carbon capture these days, and we talked about it a bit on the air now. They have two or three technologies that have become extremely economical to take carbon dioxide out of the air. And the biggest advantage of that process, like of the idea, is that they now have a use for it. When there was, we talked about this previously, when they were first taking carbon dioxide out of the air, they were looking to store it in deep caves and in deep oceans, and because there is no use for it that doesn't put it back in the air. But suddenly a bright group came up with being able to turn it into fertilizer, Peter, so the plants can absorb the carbon direct, you know, carbon dioxide directly,
yeah,
and not have to go through photosynthesis. Well, they do that anyway, but I'm just saying that they can take this in, and there's a direct use. And then there's another use, and in fact, our son in Canada has a couple of patents on this particular use. They can put carbon dioxide into wall panels.
Seriously?
Yes, they're fibrous, lightweight wall panels construction. Remember the apartment towers that burnt in England? It's cladding like that.
Yes.
But it is totally impervious to flame. It's stronger, and of course, it is environmentally good. So they're using carbon dioxide to make the concrete porous, so that it is, and they have, you know, fibrous stuff to strengthen and everything else. But the porosity in the panels, Peter, is not air, it's carbon dioxide. And it's trapped in there. And so it's just, I use it as an example of now there's a race on to see who can come up with the best technology. And the good thing about these technologies of capturing carbon dioxide, Peter, is they're portable. You can build a plant here, plant there, plant up the, you know, anywhere. Whereas a lot of industries, electrical, for example, you know, you build a massive nuclear plant or a huge hydro dam to distribute electricity. Here you can build these plants anywhere. You can build them next to where you want the industry to develop these things.
Yeah, well, I know a few people who build a few plants too. They finish up selling them. Yeah.
They smoke them, do they, Peter?
Something like that. Listen, I noticed too, a lot of people have indoor plants, which of course would be putting, absorbing the carbon dioxide inside and giving you oxygen back. So maybe there's a future in that as well.
Yeah, well, there is, Peter, but such a small amount that it's healthy, there's no question. Better than just having completely stale air. But, you know, we need the Amazon jungle, Peter, and the rum jungle up north to produce the life-saving oxygen that we need. But you're true. And these technologies, you know, I've often thought that there's a future in lampshades that produce, that do photosynthesis. You've just got to come up with a small scale, because the problem is the scale now is fairly large to turn carbon dioxide into oxygen. But if you could come up with a little gizmo, Peter, that acted as a lampshade and, you know, the was percolating oxygen into the air continuously, I think you'd do quite well with that product.
Yeah, I'd say so, you know, because let's face it, we need that. And if we don't have oxygen, well, we are up the proverbial path.
Yeah, I see in the paper the other day, or yesterday I think it was, there was nearly 30% reduction in smog and carbon dioxide emissions in the last quarter, Peter, the last 2 or 3 months since coronavirus. So there's going to be a temporary blip, and I wouldn't put it past, or I wouldn't doubt actually that it'll be measurable on the time scale, because it may be too short, you know, to be a blip. But you remember we did that program, Peter, on when the white man first went to North and South America and wiped out the Indians with smallpox and all sorts of other things, that a mini ice age occurred because of the lack of agricultural activity that those indigenous people were doing. There was hundreds of millions of people, you know, an industry that disappeared. Their industrial, you know, creativity disappeared because the white man, either directly or indirectly, reduced their numbers so severely. And they actually can measure it as a mini ice age.
And it was
So if this went on long enough, we'd measure it too, because, you know, it's a pretty significant drop.
I'm speaking of drops. Now there's an industry I like talking about.
Yes, Peter, nice organic wine. So, acellawines.com.au, free delivery Australia-wide, Peter, for a 9-pack or more. And no excuse, Peter, for not having a very nice drop of organic wine.
Mate, I credit where it's due, your courier people. By gee, you know, they send you little emails letting you know the progress. And quite surprisingly, I got the email saying it's on its way, and the fella was on my doorstep the very next morning.
Yes, it is helpful that way. So, we ship it by courier because we don't want it sitting in somebody's warehouse or have the post office have it for a week or
Wouldn't last.
Yeah, so it basically goes overnight mostly to the Sydney basin. In most capital cities, 2 days at the most, except for our friends in Western Australia, our Buck Wyatt out there, or Wyatt Buck. I always get him mixed up. He's one of our members in Perth, Peter, in that area. But we've got a couple out there. Yeah, I think I've told you the joke about Aaron Baum. He's one of our members out there, and no matter what I did, I could not get the computer to accept his details. It just wouldn't save. And so I changed his name to Baron Calm.
Oh, no.
And it went straight in, so I shipped him off this wine, and instead of Aaron Baum, it had Baron Calm.
Well, it worked, so that's the main thing. Well,
he got a heck of a laugh out of that.
Mate, it's lovely to catch up with you.
Yeah, we'll catch up maybe next week, Peter.
All right, mate. Take it easy.
Yeah, you too. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. That web address that you need to know, of course, is acellawine.com.au.